Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our talk show for the morning. My name is David Inge and we're glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to welcome back to the show Rick Karch. He's an auto mechanic. His business is Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. And for a while now, he's been stopping by. We try to have him here at least once every season, so four times a year or about, to answer questions about cars. Now, if you're having a problem and you need some advice, what you can do is call in here. Give us as much information as you can. Tell us the make and the model. And if you can describe the symptoms of the problem, then Rick will tell you what he thinks and how you might go about dealing with it. We can talk about that. Also, I'm sure we'll talk about some basic maintenance kind of tips as we are. Sooner or later, it's going to be cold. It feels kind of like spring today, but sooner or later, it's going to be winter. So you want to think about that heading into winter. We could talk about that. Whatever's on your mind, as it has to do with cars, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And, of course, we do also have a toll-free line, and that was good anywhere you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks very much. Being here. Probably would be a fine thing to start out talking here a little bit about maintenance and cold weather. Now that we are headed that direction, we know sooner or later it's going to get cold and it's going to stay cold. And you should think about doing those things that you should do here now going into the winter before it really gets to be really cold. What sort of things should people keep in mind for the cars for when it's going to be really cold?
Well, obviously the paramount thing is the cooling system. It gets cold, and the solution that needs to be in the cooling system is basically 50-50, half antifreeze and half water. And that should protect the vehicle adequately to 35 below. You can buy little testers and check it yourself. Probably the simplest way to do it is when you take your vehicle in for an oil change or just a normal maintenance or service, just specifically ask them to test it for you. I should mention, if you want to do it yourself, make sure you don't remove the radiator cap or the recovery bottle cap when the system is hot or at operating temperature. You always want to do that first thing in the morning before you start the vehicle. The system is under pressure, and in conjunction with the pressure, there's very high temperature associated with it, so you would get burned.
Yeah, so you definitely don't want to do that. And what you're talking about is a little device. It's not terribly expensive. What you do is essentially draw up some of the fluid from the radiator into this thing, and it will then tell you whether or not it's adequate.
That's correct.
Right? Okay. You know, we've talked about this before, I'm sure. When I was a kid, it seemed that it was a standard thing for people to drain and replace the coolant. It seemed like some people did that every year. That was just a thing you did in the fall.
Right.
You drained it out and you put new coolant in. Why is it that, and now it seems that you can go a lot longer and you don't have to do that every year. What's the difference? Is it the cars that are different or is it the coolant that's different?
The coolant.
It's different.
The chemistry of the product is significantly better. Dexcool, which is red in color, has a life expectancy of 5 years.
Wow.
So that's a long time.
Okay. So is it even, you know, say you had new coolant put in last year and you figured that it ought to be good for a couple of years, would you still suggest that it just to make sure that you check it and make sure that it's okay?
Yes, you should test it each fall.
Okay. Let's talk about batteries. That's another one of those issues that you don't want to get up at some cold morning or be somewhere in the car not start because it doesn't have enough juice to crank the engine. Is that something that is an item that can be checked just to make sure that the battery is adequate and that the charging system is doing what it's supposed to do?
Correct. When you, as far as the charging system is concerned, when you turn the key on prior to starting the vehicle, there should be one of the red lights should look like a battery. And when you start the vehicle, that light should go out. And it shouldn't come on at any time dimly or bright, and if it does, there is a problem with the charging system or the alternator. As far as the battery is concerned, generally what I suggest is after 5 years, it should just be replaced. So if you have a battery and you know how old it is, when you get to 5 years, just replace it.
Okay.
Generally, you can tell when the battery is getting older. The vehicle seems to turn over a little slower, or maybe it takes a little longer for it to start, and those are good symptoms. And That battery can be tested, to answer your question,
okay.
Yes.
And for not all cars are lucky enough to have a garage to live in. My poor Corolla lives outdoors all year round.
Mm-hmm.
Does the fact that a car is outside in all conditions, does that have anything to do with battery life? Will you get less out of your battery if it has to sit outside as opposed to sitting in a garage? I think that's one of those things that people think.
Yeah, I don't think it really has that much of a difference.
No, so it doesn't really matter.
No, most of the battery technology today is phenomenal, and some of these batteries carry a 6-year warranty. And when they say a battery has a warranty, it's a prorated warranty, which means that when you purchase the battery, if it fails within the first year, you get a percentage of money back. In other words, if it fails in the first 6 months, it's usually 100%, and then it may go to 90%, and then 80%, and it progressively mm-hmm. goes down, of course, to nothing. So a battery, it's important you document when you purchase a battery, keep the receipt, because there is, depending on when you have a problem with a battery, you may be able to get some money back or credit toward the purchase of the next battery.
Okay. Our guest this morning, Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. If you have car questions, now's the time to call 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a couple of callers here ready to go. First person is in Charleston and on our toll free line, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have an 89 Honda Civic that last summer my fan would run all the time. I took it to the mechanic shop, and they went through and found electrical problem with it, and now the fan will shut off. But what happens now is that the fan, once it comes on, will continue to run unless I take and turn the heater on, turn the blower on, and then it'll go off. But it won't seem to cycle like it does on my other car. I wonder what you thought the problem might be.
Where's the temperature gauge riding?
It's the temperature gauge. I can't see any significant difference when I look at it now or before when it didn't have the problem. And the temperature gauge doesn't seem to bob anything much different when the fan goes on or off.
So it's a little less than halfway?
Yeah, it rides what would be normal position for it.
Okay. Then probably has to do with the switch in the radiator. That comes on at a specific temperature,
mm-hmm.
and it may be the backside of that switch is exposed to coolant, and over time and age, the backside of that switch gets corroded, and that corrosion becomes an insulator, and sometimes it affects how fast or how slow that sensor heats up or cools down. So I would just suggest replacing that.
Where is that switch on that car?
The bottom of the radiator on the passenger side.
Okay. Now, I had the place that looked at it, I went back to them with that same question, have to fix it, and they told me when they put it on all their systems that everything checked out electrically all right as far as all those sensors.
Well, the only way you can really test that particular switch is with a thermometer in the cooling system by monitoring the temperature when it comes on and comes off. It has an on temperature and an off temperature.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They also told me that they put a heat gun on the radiator, and it was hotter at the top than it was the bottom.
That's correct.
Is that normal?
Yes.
Okay.
There's heat transfer associated with the radiator. As the coolant comes from the engine into the radiator, it's going to be hotter than when it comes out of the radiator. That's its principle.
Okay. My question to them was, or they came back saying that, well, your radiator is probably not working like it did, that it may be plugged up or something inside that's causing the temperature difference to me like it is.
Well, you'd mentioned that it was not overheating, though.
No, not at all.
Okay. Yeah, if there's a problem with the radiator, it will run warm.
Yeah.
Because it can't dissipate the heat.
Okay.
That's the reason and its function.
Okay. The other question, I've heard talk where you can also check a radiator by the alkalinity in the system to see whether the antifreeze has gone bad or not. Is that true?
There are testers that do that, fundamentally it's a voltmeter. I don't use that. It's more of a visual observation of the cooling system. Typically when it's old, it'll actually turn brown or rusty in color.
So then,
as long as it's clean in appearance, it's fine.
In other words, they say just do it every 2 years. If your antifreeze looks as good as it did or close to when you bought new, are you still taking a chance that the alkalinity could be off and you would need to replace anyway?
Every 2 years?
Yeah.
Some manufacturers, that's what they recommend, every 2 years. Some recommend 3. So you can go, the best thing to do is go with the manufacturer's recommendation or depending on what type of antifreeze you're using. Now, some people actually switch to that new style antifreeze, which I mentioned earlier, is a 5-year antifreeze. And antifreeze is really not that expensive, you know, to drain it and refill it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, then.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have somebody up next on cell phone, so I hope the other callers wouldn't mind if we got that person first, and this will be line 3. Hello.
Yeah. I have a question. Well, 2 questions. Can you mix Durex antifreeze with the other antifreeze?
No.
Okay. That's what I thought. I have a 96 Thunderbird, 80,000 mile, and the transmission wants to jerk and jump. I had another car at about 100,000 mile, and I changed the fluid and it corrected the problem. How do you tell when the fluid needs changed, and how do you tell if the transmission is bad?
Well, have you checked the fluid level?
Yes, it's okay.
And what color is the fluid?
It's still, you know, kind of a reddish color. It's not a real deep red. I took it to a shop, and I told them to change the fluid, but they just put a quart of, they changed the filter, took the pan off, took the filter out, put a quart of fluid back in, some additive, and it ran about 200 or 300 miles, and it was okay, and now it's starting to jerk and jump, and I thought about maybe just pumping all the fluid out, and changing it all, and trying it.
Well, you can try it. It sounds like you've got a transmission problem, though. If you've already changed the filter and the fluid once and it helped for a while and you put some additive in there, that it's probably an internal problem.
Okay. Thank you, Nat.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. Well, let's go back here to line number 1. And, well, I guess now that's in Champagne, line 1. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
It's pretty good troubleshooting over the phone like this, but a couple of garages have tried to fix a coolant problem in my truck and haven't been able to do so.
What kind of problem?
A coolant?
Coolant, okay.
Yeah. I replaced the thermostat, and it seems to, even when the radiator comes into play, the water in the radiator starts to circulate, which it does because the hose gets hot, it goes up to high temperature pretty quick. Can you think of anything it might be?
What kind of vehicle is it?
It's a S10 pickup, but it's got a V8 engine in it.
Okay. So in other words, if you drive down the road and there's air always moving through the radiator, does it still overheat?
Yes.
It does the same thing whether it's going down the road or sitting still?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the first thing to do is to make sure that the water pump is actually moving the coolant through the radiator.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you actually have flow. Obviously, there may be a problem with the radiator.
Right, that's why I'm wondering. Would just flushing the radiator solve that, or would they know if they tried to flush it, if it was wrong or bad or not? Would the core go out or something?
Well, the best way to test a radiator, if there's any question whatsoever about it, is to simply remove it from the vehicle and take it to a radiator shop, and they can flow test it.
I see.
And they can tell you if there's an internal problem.
Uh-huh.
You can sometimes, if you have like a heat gun, like an infrared heat gun, and you can go down from the top to the bottom of the radiator, you can get a pretty good sense if there's a problem with the radiator internally. And by problem internally, it just simply means that it's plugged up or restricted, where the coolant flows through the fins or the rows that go across. But first, make sure the water pump is, in fact, moving coolant.
Well, would that be working if the water was hot coming out of the top hose, or would that not tell you?
No, it doesn't really tell you much. You could take the belt off the water pump and start the vehicle up. Right. And that upper hose would still get hot.
I see, okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Let's go to line number two. This is also Champagne. Hello.
Good morning. We have a 91 Sable LS wagon, which we factory ordered with heavy-duty suspension. And when we got it, it was entirely adequate for us. But over the years, we've grown older and bigger and heavier, and we carry around more stuff. So now when we travel, sometimes the rear suspension is getting almost all the way down. And I asked our dealer about it, and he suggested putting in heavy-duty springs for about $400, but I suspect that it already has them with the heavy-duty suspension. Talked to an alignment shop here in town, and they suggested air-adjustable shocks so that we could pump it up. Would those actually increase the load, or should we just be resigned to trying to live within the limits?
Do you have a trailer, too?
No.
Okay. Do you know, does that have leaf springs in the back, or is it like a strut, McPherson strut?
I think it has struts.
It does,
but
okay.
It also has shocks.
Right. Well, if it's the McPherson strut style, then the only solution is the one that the dealer mentioned to you, and that's to replace the springs. I would suggest looking at some of the aftermarket springs that are out. They have some springs that are referred to as progressive wound, which means that when the vehicle is empty, it'll still ride normally. It won't be harsh or abrupt when you hit bumps. But as you load it and as the springs compress, the actual spring pressure increases, so that the more weight you put in the vehicle, actually the stiffer the spring becomes.
Would that actually increase the load capacity?
Yes.
Because I remember one time we went on a long trip and we were probably overloaded, and we lost both rear tires on the way back when the tread peeled off the inside of both.
Yes. Yeah, and you have to run the tire pressures up to maximum cold inflation.
So progressive wound springs and air-adjustable shocks probably won't do it.
Well, I would just go with the springs. Some of those you cannot get air shocks for, depending on what type of rear suspension it is. That's why I was asking.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. And again, we'll go here to the next caller. It'll be line number four, and the caller is in Marshall.
Hello?
Yes.
My question is, what is synthetic oil made of, and what are the advantages of using it, and does it have to be changed any less often than normal lubrication oil?
Well, as far as the interval is concerned, some manufacturers that use synthetic oil from day one of the vehicle will let it, even in the owner's manual, say up to 15,000 miles. Now, some it's around some will say 7,500. A lot of people will run approximately twice as far, meaning most normal oil recommendations, 3 months or 3,000 miles. With synthetic, you can easily run twice that.
So is it used by a lot by garages to pour in place of regular oil?
Well,
or does it have to be recommended by the make of car or anything like that?
No, you can put it in any vehicle.
Even though it's been using regular oil?
Yes, that's fine to switch. It's much more expensive, though.
It's like, that's what I understand.
Right, it's $470.
But if you don't have to have it changed, then it would be maybe worthwhile.
Well, particularly if your vehicle sits outside during the winter, I recommend it to people that, because it's so much easier on the engine and the lubricating system, because that synthetic oil doesn't get thick like conventional oil when outside temperatures drop.
And what is it made of?
I'm really not sure about the chemistry of it. I know they make a full synthetic, then they have, I think the second one is a semi-synthetic, so it's halfway between the conventional petroleum oil and a synthetic. But as far as the pure synthetic, I don't know the specific.
Is it less harmful to the environment, or does that make it have anything?
No, it doesn't.
No.
No, all oil has to be disposed of.
Okay, well, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We are almost at our midpoint here. Our guest is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's here generally every season, and we talk about car care. So if you have a question, you're having a problem, you're not quite sure how to fix it, or you have other kinds of questions about maintaining your vehicle, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. I wonder what you're feeling about the whole synthetic issue is. If you have a vehicle that either is it's large, it has a big engine, it's heavy, you do towing with it, or you're going to be hauling around a lot of heavy stuff. Would that influence you to go with a synthetic more than the traditional kind of oil, or does that not matter?
Yes, the synthetic oil. The fundamental advantage to it is that it does provide better lubrication characteristics, and particularly in a engine that's stressed or severe duty, maybe referred to as. Almost all race cars that you see on TV have synthetic oil in them. Yeah. And because they'll clear up to 300 degrees, I've seen with some of the race cars that I've dealt with, and I've always used synthetic oil in race cars. And I know it's saved me more than once. If it had conventional oil in there, it probably would have broken down and then ruined the engine.
Yeah.
So it's, in those instances, it's definitely worth the extra money.
All right. We have other callers and a couple of people on cell phones, so we'll get them first. We'll start with line one. Hello.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes.
Okay. I'm driving a 2000 Mustang, and two of my tires are a lot worn down, more worn down than the other two. And I was wondering if it's okay to replace just two tires at once, or should I replace all four?
No, you can replace just two, but you need to keep up with the tire rotation.
Yeah, I know.
So that's why you are in the position you're at.
Exactly.
Because
all right,
the front tires are going to wear out faster than the back.
Right, exactly. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. And that is one of that should be spelled out very clearly in your owner's manual, that's a periodic thing that you're supposed to do at a certain mileage. That's one of the things you're supposed to do.
That's correct.
All right. And you generally the pattern is to move the
rear.
So you don't switch the sides. So no. It's just the two front and the two rear, same side, just switch the front to the back.
Yeah, like the left front would go to the left rear. Right. The right front would go to the right rear. The only ones that, let's see, I'm trying to think what manufacturer is doing it different now. I can't remember if it's Acura. I think it's Acura is actually telling you to cross them now in their owner's manual. But the general recommendation is just stay on the same side, move it from the front to the back and the back to the front.
Okay. Let's go to one. We've got another cell phone here, line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I drive a 99 Suburban. And I was having some either cupping or wheel hum in my tires. I had a 10-ply radial tire. Someone suggested it was a too heavy tire, so I downsized to a 4-ply radial. And when I get to about 60 miles an hour, I find I get a vibration. I've had the U-joints replaced. Could it be a wheel bearing in my front, or what do you suggest I might have a problem?
Let's define cupping. Is if you ran your hand on the tire, does it have high and low spots?
I didn't feel that, but I just went and put brand new radials all around, and I still have the same vibration I had before.
Okay, so what were you making reference to when you said cupping then?
The tire man said if you had any even wear, you'd have cupping, which would create road hum or noise.
But
and vibration.
So you did not have cupping?
I guess I did not, no.
Okay, all right. Because the reason I ask is if you had cupping, then it's a problem with the shocks. As far as the vibration is concerned, at 60 miles an hour, do you feel it on the steering wheel? Do you feel it in the seat?
I feel it in the brake pedal and on the steering wheel.
So you only feel this when you step on the brakes?
No, actually, when I'm driving at 60 miles an hour, I can feel it, the vibration in my hand on the wheel. It's only when I'm up to about 60 miles an hour. I've replaced the U-joints on the drive shaft. Maybe they didn't balance it properly. I don't know what my problem is.
And the tires have been balanced or rechecked?
Brand new tires, no problem.
But have you had the balance rechecked on the tires?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, if we'll get back up just a little bit. When you step on the brakes, if you have a vibration, that's the front rotors of the brake system.
Okay.
But as far as what you're feeling in the steering wheel is concerned...
I'm sorry, what's that?
As far as the vibration in the steering wheel...
Yes.
If everything else is fine and nothing's loose, it has to be tire balance. The other thing, what happens if you go up to 70 miles an hour or 75?
Yeah, I start to lose it. It's not as noticeable.
Okay. So if you can drive through a vibration, meaning it's at a certain miles per hour and then it goes away, it's usually something associated with balance as opposed to something being bent.
Maybe I'll have to take it back to a different tire shop.
Well, the only other thing you might try, and I don't know if it's something you can do yourself, is just move the tires from the front to the back.
I can do that.
And then go drive it again.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that fixes the problem.
If I had a wheel bearing problem, what would that be?
A wheel bearing, it will usually create like a growling or a humming noise. And if you're just going, say, 40 or 45 miles an hour, and you're going straight down the road, and you weave to the right and weave to the left...
That's not a problem. I have good alignment.
No, as you weave to the left and weave to the right, you will hear a growling noise.
I don't have that.
Okay, then the wheel bearings are fine.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for your time. I continue to your show.
All right, thanks for the call. And we'll just keep on talking with folks. The next person in line should be on our line number 3. Again, that's got another car phone here. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I don't have any problem with my car right now, but it's a 93 Accord, and I'm just concerned about my water pump. And when should I change it, or should I just wait till it blows off and, you know, I'm in the middle of the road with my radiator heating up or steaming up? Should I change it now?
How many miles are on the car?
I got 60,000 miles.
Well, the timing belt on that car...
I replaced the timing belt one time in a... We have this Urbana adult education thing. I replaced it myself under somebody's guidance. But then when we looked at the water pump, it's too far. It's too close to the firewall. It's time consuming, and the my professor, whatever, kind of discouraged me because it's a lot of work.
Well, it only takes about another 20 minutes when you've got the timing belt off. That's usually when we change them.
Yeah, I know that, but should I be concerned and have the whatever mechanic or dealership change it now, or should I just wait till it breaks up and, you know, I'm in the middle of the road?
No, it won't do that to you. Usually what they do is they just start to leak a little bit, and they typically leak only when the engine's shut off. And the coolant that you'll notice that'll be on the ground when it does that will be from the left front.
Okay. So I just have to wait for those symptoms before...
That's what I would do since you've already replaced the timing belt.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
That's what I would do since you've already replaced the timing belt.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, very good. We will just keep talking with folks. Our guest, by the way, here is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive Service in Champaign. He's generally here every season and talks about car care. So if you have a problem, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Got a couple of other people here, been patient, and we'll go next to the caller on line number 2, and they are in Champaign. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I have a 1973 Chevy P30. It's a box van, looks like a old UPS truck. And I've been stranded on the road many times with it, so finally I bit the bullet and bought a new Toyota Tacoma with a trailer. So that's good. But I still have this old P30, and I have some questions about it. I've overheated several times. Once the belt broke, and another time I had... I just had some other radiator problems, and unfortunately, I didn't notice I was overheating probably until it was already pretty hot. And I'm just wondering what kind of damage did I probably do, because there was essentially no coolant flowing through the system at the time. And also, I've noticed I have a leak in the transmission, and I'm just wondering if those are related, because I think they sort of showed up at the same time, but I'm not sure if it did. And since then, I've replaced the water pump and all sorts of other things, and the coolant system's now running fine, but I'm just wondering how bad did I mess everything up.
Well, as far as when it overheated, you were on the highway?
Yeah.
Did it lose power?
No. In fact, you'd never know until I just happened to slow down, and then I could see steam and,
right.
and just, you know.
As long as it did not lose power,
mm-hmm.
it's probably okay.
Oh, good.
I mean, you may have stressed the head gaskets a little bit, but mm-hmm. when they lose power, then you've definitely damaged it.
What is that an indication of when the power gets lost? Is that just
that means that it's just gotten so hot that as the pistons were going up and down in the cylinders,
huh.
the cylinders got so hot that they actually scuffed or drag on the cylinder wall.
Oh, right.
And then it creates internal problems. Now, as far as the transmission leak, no.
Okay.
The relationship between overheating and a transmission leak. So that's just on that particular van, you could just crawl under there and look.
Yeah.
See if it's like the pan. The pan is kind of a rectangular looking
uh-huh.
part on the bottom of the transmission with a series of bolts around the perimeter.
Right.
That's usually the most common area.
Okay.
If it's leaking where the engine and the transmission bolt together,
yeah.
that would be the torque converter seal, which would involve removing the transmission to replace.
And that's a big job, it sounds like.
That's probably 4 hours.
Okay, because I don't think I could do that. I do most of the maintenance on this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have another stubborn problem with this thing. I swear, this thing has taught me more about engines. I have on one of my valve cover gaskets, I always have, and they're kind of at a slant, and mm-hmm. I always have oil leaking out of the kind of the lower back corner, and
right.
I've taken those things off and replaced the gaskets. I went with synthetic gaskets, and then I did cork gaskets, and I put gasket sealer. I've done everything under the sun, and I cannot get that thing to stop leaking oil there. So what do you suppose might, how can I not get a good seal there?
It's bent.
Oh, the whole cover is?
Yeah, the cover's bent from, you know, when it leaks, you kind of get a wrench out and you tighten it a little bit more,
right.
and then tomorrow, the next day, you do it a little bit more, and the next thing you know, and the next time you take the valve cover off,
yeah.
just lay it on a flat metal bench or a flat surface,
right.
and you'll see that corner is warped.
Oh, yeah.
And what you can do is flip it upside down and take a hammer, a ball peen hammer, two hammers, and straighten out. Where it's bent is where the bolts go through.
Okay.
So that as you're tightening the bolts, that part is compressing the gasket, but the outlying corners
right.
are not.
Yeah, because it just starts to stink because it's mm-hmm. right by the manifold.
Right, and it runs on there.
Oh, man, it's just nasty. Okay, well, thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Okay, again, we'll just keep on going. Got a lot of callers this morning. Next person is in Chicago, and line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yes, I have a 1988 Grand Marquis. It's been garage kept for the last 12 years. I have a little over 100,000 miles on it. I took it to my local mechanic because over the last 2 years, I've developed an oil leak in the rear of the motor. He told me it was the rear crankshaft seal. He said he wasn't going to get involved with it because it was so old. He said taking it apart was just not part of his deal. I took it to my local dealership, and they also said that because of the age of the motor and the mileage, they didn't really want to get involved in something like that. The car's in mint condition, it runs fantastic, except for that leak, and that leak is getting worse and worse. Any suggestions?
Is it a 5-liter V8?
Yeah, it's a 5.0 V8, yes.
Yeah. The first thing I would do is take it maybe back to the first place you went.
Yes.
And tell them to take the PCV valve out and to remove that brass screen below the PCV valve.
Okay.
What happens with those 5 liters, it's the number one problem with oil leaks, is that the crankcase ventilation system cannot function, and their pressure builds up within the crankcase, and it literally pushes oil out.
Okay.
And that screen that goes underneath the PCV valve, it's called a positive crankcase ventilation valve.
Okay.
That screen gets plugged up, and the system can't function.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that suggestion. I'm definitely going to try that.
All right.
All right. Good thank luck. You. We go on here. Next is Champagne Line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a 1994 Buick Roadmaster station wagon, 5.7-liter engine, and for about the last year or so, or last winter, I was getting a little bit of heat out of the heater core. The air conditioner works out of the heater. The air conditioner seems to work pretty well, but this year I'm not getting any heat. Do you think maybe it's the heater core, or do you think it's something in the electronic
climate control?
Yes, that climate control.
Well, that's a good question. I've seen both. I've put several heater cores in those for what you're describing, and also had problems with the blend doors. So,
but even with the air conditioning, I mean, the temperature regulation in the summer seems to work just fine. You know, it never
correct.
Gets too cold.
That's right. Have you had anybody look at it?
I'm going to.
Okay.
I was just wondering what you thought of it and what it might cost to do that.
Well, you can just open the hood and feel the two hoses going into the heater core, which are over on the passenger side.
Sure. Okay.
And if they're both about the same temperature,
then there's a plug there.
No, then my first reaction would be that the heater core is probably okay.
I see. You mean if they're both warm?
Yes.
Okay.
Then you'd be looking at a blend door that's maybe a motor that's not functioning and not moving that flap. They use a flap to move. That's why it's referred to as a blend door, meaning it blends ambient air, outside air with the warm air from the heater core.
Okay.
And it means it's not be moving.
Okay. Well, if it is, you know what it might cost if a heater core is involved?
No, not specifically, I don't. Okay. I mean, you can call and obviously get a price on it ahead of time.
Okay.
But obviously it's something you need to take care of.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you. To Farmer City next, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
I was wondering if I was cursed. I go back through some history. I had a 90 grand caravan that blew the transmission at 78,000, but they were notorious for that, and it was fixed under warranty. Had a 96 Taurus that I just drove too long, 130,000, and blew the transmission. So I thought, I'll get an Accord, the Honda Accord. They're just beautiful cars. I got a 98 Accord. At 75,000, it blew the transmission and was fixed at under warranty. But is this just something that happens to any vehicle, or because I thought, you know, getting something like a Honda that was, you know, designed by someone other than GM or American cars, that it would hold up better. But so, what's going on?
Well, are you servicing the transmission as?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you get stuck in the snow or the mud or?
No, not really.
Then I don't have an answer.
They said they had when I brought it in the second time, the Honda, that, yes, we did have trouble with those. They just don't tell you that the first time. They try to just change the fluid and the filter and see if that helps. But they said the 98 Accords did have a problem, and they extended the warranty for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But how long should typically an automatic transmission last?
Well, your first one, meaning the Caravan, you're pretty much on target with that one. Those, you know, if you have one of those, it's really not a question of if you're going to have a transmission problem. It's more of when.
Yeah.
As far as the Taurus, if you're always servicing that, you know, it should definitely have gone more than 130,000.
Really?
And as far as the Honda, yeah, I'm kind of surprised
yeah.
at that, because they're usually quite dependable.
Yeah. I guess I'll try a Camry next.
Well, but, I mean, you're not... The reason I ask, because if people get stuck a lot, you know, and they go from drive to reverse and reverse
right.
to drive,
right.
that it overheats the thing, or if they power brake them a lot. Or,
yeah.
But you're not doing any of those things?
Oh,
no. Towing?
No.
Well, sorry to hear you had problems, but
yeah,
I mean, you're definitely doing everything you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I'm getting it serviced,
right.
changing the fluid and all that stuff. Okay, well, I guess I'm just the statistic then. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Right, thanks for the call. Let's go next to a caller in Normal, and that would be line number 2. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a 94 Ford Aerostar, and the RPM of the engine seems to randomly go faster and slower without touching the accelerator. It's been recommended that it's possibility the throttle position sensor. Does that make any sense?
Well, usually if there's a problem with any of the sensors for the computer system, the check engine light will come on.
It is.
Oh, okay. Well, then you access the information in the computer, and it will tell you which component is at fault. And that's where you would start.
Okay. Does that sound like it might make sense, though? Or just, I should probably have it checked out that way.
Well, you should definitely have it tested. I mean, that's the nice thing about that vehicle, is that it helps tremendously in diagnosing what's going on, because you can retrieve that information.
Okay. All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Next is Chicago, line number one.
Thank you. A friend of mine has a 92 Chevrolet Caprice Classic, and it's got about 130,000, 40,000 miles on it, and it's at a point where it's no longer past the air pollution control emission test. And they said, well, you better get that fixed if you want to keep running it, otherwise, you know, take your license and all that, reject it, his privilege for driving. And I said, well, why do you want to still have that car, that mileage and so forth? Who knows what else is going to go wrong? And the fact that they're saying it's going to be $500 or $600 to get it in shape to pass the air pollution tests and so forth. What do you think about doing it at that stage of the life of a car, going ahead and putting the time and money into a car and hoping it still function and, you know, expecting the other things to wear out, or do you think it's time to get rid of it?
Well, a lot of it depends on the history of the car. If the car's been pretty trouble-free, one owner, had all the proper maintenance.
It was formerly a police car that was sold at auction, and it held up pretty good for the first owner, his son, and who unloaded it on his father, and now he's facing the problems of fixing it. So I don't know what kind of wear and tear it received as a police car.
If it was a police car before, I don't think it would be worth spending the money on it.
I think that's a good opinion, and I thank you for that. I'll tell him.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. To Kankakee for line number three. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I got a 1993 Tempo with 106,000 miles on it. My speedometer doesn't seem to work until the engine's warmed up, and at high speed it'll kick in, but it'll jitter. And when I slow down again, it'll basically go back down to zero and stop working. When I step on the gas, it'll jump up but then bounce back down to zero again. I was wondering if it was anything more complicated than a new speedometer cable.
Well, I'm not sure if that one actually has a cable. Does it?
I don't know. I don't know. It did have some transmission work done. This car is a freebie. I don't want to spend a lot of money on it.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, the first thing to do, as far as if it was a cable, no. If it has a cable, there may be a problem with the drive gear. Maybe it's slipping in the transmission.
Okay.
Or there may be a problem with the speedo head. That's pretty easy to check. More than likely, it's an electronic speedometer. In other words, it has a little Hall generator on the transmission that sends an electrical signal to the speedometer. And that would be the first thing to check, would be the sensor at the transmission.
Let me ask you this then. So how much would something like this run if I don't have the time to work on it myself and frankly don't have the inclination? It's an old car and I'm getting ready to junk it. But how much would something like that run?
Probably to check it out. If it's the sensor in the transmission, I'm sure you'd be looking, depending on where you live and what the labor rates are, you know, be the parts cost plus maybe 2 hours of labor.
Okay. And you said there's no if there's no speedometer cable, what's the other mechanism by which the speedometer works if there's no cable?
Then it's getting the electrical signal from the speed sensor, vehicle speed sensor on the transmission.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. And we'll try and get at least one more here. Seidel is the caller, line four. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. You've been talking about transmissions off and on, and what is your recommendation for servicing? You can go to a quick change place, and they want you to change the fluid every 15,000 miles, and you hear other numbers elsewhere. Is there a time or a mileage recommendation you have, and what is the servicing?
Well, most of the manufacturers will spell that out in their maintenance schedule. We usually recommend every 30,000.
To just change the fluid or to do something else?
Fluid and filter.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, if somebody wants to call real quick here, we can get in a caller or two left. We have a couple minutes. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We talked just way back at the beginning of the program. We talked about maintenance, and particularly as we're going into the winter. So we said, you know, try to pay attention to your battery. How old is it? How's the car cranking when you start it? Take a look at your coolant to make sure that it's doing what it's supposed to do. You might want to, it's maybe a little bit more critical to make sure that your windshield washer fluid is full and you've got stuff in there so when you push that button, something actually squirts out to clean off your windshield. Anything else that you'd suggest?
Well, the wiper blades obviously are important in the winter. They're not that expensive. You can change them yourself. The tires, you need to have the tires looked at and make sure there's adequate tread. And most tire shops be more than happy to come out and look at your tires if you have a question about them. It's usually a visual observation to make sure the tread is fairly even all the way across, meaning from the inside to the outside. Tire inflation is very important. So those things, I think, are kind of the highlights.
Okay.
And we've talked quite a bit today about maintenance, so I think we've conveyed that fairly well.
All right, we'll try to get one more. Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Yeah, I was wondering what would cause my car. I've never had to put oil in my own car because I have it serviced, but I take it to a different place now. And since I've taken it there, a few days before the oil change was up, the low oil light came on, and I put a quart of oil in it. And then when he changed it yesterday, he printed out on the printout that it was another quart low, and I asked them to check everything, and one of the service men said it might just be the pistons burning more oil, and I was wondering what you had to say about it.
Well, it's possible that as far as internal oil consumption is concerned, in other words, the engine is burning oil, that can be tested. My first question would be, are we using the same oil? Are we still using 10W30, or did we go to 5W30?
I hope they're using the same kind. I'm not even sure because I'm not there when they put it
right.
in.
Well, that would be the first question.
Okay.
Just to make sure you're using the exact same weight or viscosity of oil.
Okay.
So I would suggest you give them a call and ask them that question.
Okay. How much are your oil changes?
We don't. They vary so much because of filter costs.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have a set price for the oil change.
Okay.
It just depends on how much oil it takes and how much the oil filter costs. And, I mean, you know, an oil filter for a Porsche is a whole lot different than it is
right.
for a Honda or a Volvo.
Mine's so. an Alero 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I said, I'd never had to put any oil in it before. Myself ever, and I was just wondering maybe if they forgot to put enough oil in it, or you know what I'm saying?
Well, you can check that yourself.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely will, but I appreciate your time.
Okay,
right,
sure.
Thank
thanks.
You. Well, we got to go. Leave it at that with our thanks to our guest, Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.